Sea Fever, written by Anne Cleves and read by Sean Barrett. The moral right of the author has been asserted. Chapter 1. Even if there had been no murder, the last trip of the season of the Jesse Ellen would have been news. A new bird for the world, after all, is rather special. There would undoubtedly have been interviews with specialist reporters, speculation about where the bird could possibly breed, sponsorship, perhaps, for an expedition to track it down to a cliff in some lonely and uninhabited island. There was, George felt all along, a relationship between the murder of the boy and the sighting of a storm petrel never before recorded. He was not so superstitious that he considered the death as a cause of the appearance of the bird. It was no sacrifice to the forces of nature. Neither did he see the petrel as an albatross, bringing misfortune and disaster with its astounding beauty. Yet he thought that if the bird had never appeared, flying so close to the boat that they could make a plan of its wing formula and see the colour of the webs of its feet, Greg Franks would still be alive. Certainly the boy's death spoiled the bird for them. They hated him, as if it were his fault, because the elation and joy which should have lasted for weeks was cut short, and the fame they deserved was denied to them. George Palmer Jones met Greg Franks first at Holywell Pond, a Northumberland Wildlife Trust reserve. The memory of the meeting was strangely vivid, though there had been many such incidents in his bird-watching career. Afterwards, when other rare birds turned up, he looked out for Greg and noticed him. Despite that, when Mr. and Mrs. Franks hired him to trace their missing son, he did not at first connect them with the boy who had disturbed the Balon's crake at Holywell. When he did, the memory of the day returned to him sharp and complete, as if it had happened only minutes before. It had been early June, a hot and sticky day, with the threat of thunder and swallows flying low over yellow rape fields. The field by the pond was waist-high with buttercups, clover, and cow parsley. George arrived at the hide overlooking the pond at lunchtime to discover that the bird had not been seen that day. It was probably skulking in the reed bed, said the exultant locals who had found the bird. It often did that. The hide was full of people crammed together along the bench seat, waiting. There was the smell of hot creosote and damp vegetation. They talked occasionally, but their attention was on the still water. They were prepared to wait until evening. "Just be patient," said the locals. "It came out at dusk yesterday. It won't have gone anywhere." Then Greg Franks burst into the hide. He seemed physically incapable of patience. He paced across the wooden floor, smoking one cigarette after another, and his restlessness was so obvious, so flamboyant, that he unsettled all the others there.
"I want some action," he said at last. "I'm going in. I need this bird."
"Don't be a fool, man," said one of the locals, a big square man with hands like spades. "You'll scare it off. Then no one will see it. This is a nature reserve. Do you think the Trust will put out news of other rarities if you go tramping all over it?"
He stood up to confront Greg, blocking his way, and George thought there might be a fight. But Greg was too quick for them. He slipped out of the hide and into the reserve. They saw his sleek, black head moving like a stoat's through the reed bed. A moorhen gave an alarm call and splashed into view. In the hide there was silence. Suddenly the crake was in the open, flying. It was so close to the hide that they could not focus their binoculars onto it. The bird flew around the pond once more, and they thought it would settle again at the edge of the water to give more prolonged views. But it changed direction and disappeared very quickly in the heat haze. Greg Franks must have tripped in the reed bed, because when he stood up to wave his arms triumphantly at them, he was dripping wet, and his hair straggled like seaweed across his face. When he returned to the hide, George was surprised by the reception the boy received. The bird had been frightened off by an act of stupid exhibitionism, yet the watchers were indulgent, as if George were a spoilt but gifted child who should be allowed his own way. They had, of course,